It's a pleasure to welcome Harry Estend, Jr., head of an economic research and forecasting company. Welcome back.
Nice to be back, Chris.
Wanted to jump right into this situation in Puerto Rico. You're having trouble with electricity and many other issues. Can you illustrate for our listeners the severity of this total wipeout of Puerto Rico?
For the first, 10 days, there was a ban on alcohol. There was pretty much nobody had electricity. Almost no restaurants or stores open. You have to stand in line 6-7 hours to get gasoline for your car or for your generator. Now the gas lines aren't so bad, but there's just not that much open. Got $1,200 worth of cash when I was in the States, and now I'm going back on Monday late afternoon. Because I can't even write here. I mean, no internet, without electricity. So the only thing that works is this right thing right now is my cell phone.
We went through something similar, but just for 4 days and 3 nights. And the only thing that saved us, this outdated 8-year-old 2,000-watt generator that I had to rebuild just to have some electricity. I guess it would be at a premium, wouldn't it? You wouldn't be able to find much gasoline to run a generator.
That was the problem, people having to stand in line. I think the gas situation's a little better now, but then there's a guy in our building that's with Gulf, and he says they're about out. So I don't really know what's happening. All I know is my wife is in New York. I'm going to head up there. We got a little place in New York. We have two places here, too. We have a condo in San Juan area, and then we have a house on an island called Culebra. I haven't even been able to get over and see that, but, I mean, that's built to withstand a hurricane. I think we got water on the floor. That was all. No window breakage or anything like that. So, but I can't even get over there to check it out.
Harry, do you have an automobile?
Yeah, I've got two.
Okay, good. One thing that really helped us get through the 4 days without power, they have these tiny cigarette lighter inverters. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but even one of the smaller wattage ones that plugs right into your car, that's how I was able to charge up our laptops. So I'd go run the engine, plug in the tiny inverter. It's only $20, $30 on Amazon, charge up our modem so that I would have internet, and then charge up the two laptops as well. People have no clue. Everything shuts down. There's nowhere to go. No one to help.
We put on a conference in Nashville, Tennessee, so I had to be up in the States. But she got out on the first plane out that first Monday after the hurricane. I didn't get out until the Saturday after. I had some stuff I had to handle here. But it took that long to get out on flights. I mean, there's just not anything available. And then you go to the airport, and the lines are super long, and there's no air conditioning, and everybody's sweating to death. I mean, it's crazy. I should have listened to my wife and not even come back. Now I'm trapped here until Monday late afternoon.
Have you had a chance to keep up with topicality, or is that probably not something that you've had access to?
See the market now and then on my cell phone. The stock market, to me, looks like it's right up against resistance around 23,200. Trend line coming through there, so if it can break above that, it would be bullish, but I wouldn't be surprised to see the market set back. The question is, is it topping? I think it's in a topping process, probably between October and January. It could be topping here, but the problem with these darn bubbles, they just go until they blow. So, I mean, this market, I mean, it doesn't matter what bad news about Kim Jong-un or the economy, anything else, it just goes up because investors have nowhere to go except for stocks, given that the bond interest rates are so low, held down by central banks around the world. So, this thing's just going to keep going until something goes wrong. But I think the market's getting in dangerous territory here. I certainly wouldn't be chasing it as an investor.
The exits are more appealing than the entrance on this market. But at the same time, we remember many of us 1999 and 2000. Could that just lead to the next run? So at this point, as long as the herd has control of the market, it seems to be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this rally has been stock buybacks. With interest rates so low, companies are incentivized to buy back their own stock. But that doesn't mean they're growing. It just makes it look like they're growing because their earnings per share is going up, but their earnings may not be going up very much. So to me, this whole rally since 2009, we've been hiring back the workers we laid off. Stocks have been playing catch up, and with a lot of mergers and acquisitions and buybacks and a lot of artificial stuff, not real solid growth. So, to me, when this thing goes, it's going to go big. I mean, that's what bubbles do. when they finally do blow, what I found, I just put a chart in my most recent newsletter that shows that for all the major bubble peaks in the last century, the average first drop was 41% over 2.6 months. So that's what happens on the other side of this. This thing just keeps going up. Everybody thinks, okay, you know, the Fed won't let it go down. The market's going to keep going up. And then when it finally blows, people are going to get hit very hard right off the bat.
You know, in 2006 through 2008, as we had the nice gradual topping process, my canine could have picked the top there, you know, on a typical 1-2-3 reversal. But there are the 1987s that you referred to that catch people off guard. Could even say that the NASDAQ circa 2000, there wasn't a lot of warning. They didn't exactly ring the bells. Hey, guys, here's the top. Time to start selling.
That is typically happen. Now, not always, but most of the time, that's what happens. When it goes, you saw that in China in late 2015, a second bubble peaked there in their stock market, and then the market was down like 43% in 3 months, that sort of thing. The tech crash, that was 40% in 2.5 months. The 1929 crash, the first whack, was 40-some percent in 2.5 months. So that's what you should expect, and people aren't going to get that until it happens. Then they go, oh, my gosh, I wish I hadn't chased that, you know, last 5 or 10%.
Exactly. I mean, those are the most costly ticks, the top and the bottom. All right, moving on to the CPI numbers, shot up considerably higher. Of course, they're blaming that due to increases at the gas pump plus hurricane-related price jumps. But we see higher prices, and that's no shock to most of us.
Well, you know, the other thing about inflation, I mean, we're in a deflationary environment in general. That's why central banks are having to print so much money. They're really combating deflationary forces, which will take you into a depression-like economy if they don't do that. But inflation does tend to be a late-stage thing. It will often rise into the early stages of a downturn. So it's not a surprise to me that we might get some late-stage inflation here. And that's something that should benefit gold for a while. Gold went up in the last crash. Gold went up in the early stages of the crash and then succumbed to the sell-off in the second half of 2008. So we're expecting gold to bounce up towards like 1400, give or take. But then I do expect gold to go down again when, in general, deflation pulls everything down except for high quality bonds.
Gold snapped back really sharply in 2008, and then it put in inverted head and shoulders and just never looked back to 1900. So we can't really have a conversation today without Bitcoin and related cryptos and altcoins.
Yeah, I met a guy down here, Michael Turpin. He's a real Bitcoin expert. He just spoke at our conference in Nashville. He's been involved in Bitcoin since the beginning. He was saying it used to be a tenth of a cent. You know, now it's got up to $6,000 just recently, and now, you know, I'm probably closer to five now. I haven't watched it today, but I mean, that's a real bubble. And it looks like to me it's in a fifth wave. So the question is this just the beginning of a longer run up? But I certainly, Bitcoin's looking a little dangerous to me right now, looking like it could take a correction. And then, you know what? People keep buying it, but there's a lot of interest in this.
Yeah, my thesis there is a little more out on the fringe. What's going on is you have a market that has, of course, limited supply, as we know, which is a little unusual because in our stock markets, with all the nefarious naked short selling and things of that nature, I mean, who knows what's the real supply? Well, there really are constraints on Bitcoin, and it's particularly challenging to short. The institutions have tried to come up with some ways to short Bitcoin via the ETF because they can't contain it through futures. And yes, they're trying there as well. And I'm still mining today, but I mine Monero now through GPUs and CPUs. But I was back there when it was around 50 cents. I was a little later than your friend. You know, I thought, well, this thing ran to $32. That's the peak. They have a caveat emptor and caveat venditor mindset there. You know, be nervous about buying and selling.
If it went back down to $3,000, I think it could be interesting. But I don't want to buy it when it's zooming up because you know, you are going to see sharp corrections, and we have seen sharp corrections, but we've also seen very, very strong surges. I know Michael Turpin doesn't think this thing's anywhere near over. I mean, he thinks it's a long-term trend, which I do too. I think that it's like the internet too, the internet of like transactions and value and money where the internet is failing. I mean, they have to replace my credit card at least every 3 months to winning. So it's This is about a lower cost, faster, and most importantly, more secure transaction system. And it is, in a sense, in many, many years for enough dominant players. Yeah, I think when some really big companies get to scale, then you'll have more stability in the price. You can't function like a currency with normal currencies when it's this volatile.
Let me just illustrate a couple of key things here that it's easy for even those of us who are enthusiasts and aficionados to forget. In the final analysis, Bitcoin is not really just a currency. I mean, it's a bank account. So let me give you an example. You're in, I don't know, Mumbai. You don't have access to any bank account, but you did come across a broken down iPhone or Android. You set up a free Bitcoin account and you've got 1/100th of a Bitcoin. And now you can go buy your family some food by just swiping it literally against another iPhone scanner. You're going to see billions of people who never had or would have a credit card or a bank account. We're on the cusp of a blockchain revolution, which brings transparency into everyday transactions. And we're seeing the merging now of tangible assets, such as deeds, real estate, cars, autos, insurance contracts, hospital records, as well as gold and silver assets and collectibles. And that, you see, might undermine the paper money machinations we've been talking about. It circumvents the petrodollar because it facilitates alternatives to purchasing oil.
This is early, very early stage. I think this is something that's going to run and grow for decades, like the internet did. You know, we're just going to have to see where it goes. But I do, and I agree with Michael Turpin, that this is a big deal. This is a big trend. It is like the internet too, but it's more around transactions and things that you can value rather than just information and messaging.
You might think of it as the Gutenberg press, the guilds to the Gutenberg press changed everything. Well, people have likened the internet, you know, to the new Gutenberg press. This, in many ways, I believe, and we think, is the next leap, the next evolution of fiat. But it also is a huge productivity booster. Think of all the waste in paperwork and lost transactions and endless throughout government. I mean, the bureaucracy. This is the bureaucracy destroyer. That's what you have in the blockchain. Okay, we're talking about eliminating millions of jobs, but creating millions of jobs in this remarkable new industry. There's a lot of opportunity here, and that's why I hope the powers that be will get off our backs. But, you know, they always fight the transition to new power structures. So, are there any parting thoughts for our listeners and investors today?
Suggest strongly that there's going to be a major crash in stocks in the next 2.5 years between late 2017 and early 2020. That's the danger zone. I don't know what grain of sand is going to cause the avalanche, but there always is one. And when it does, as I said earlier, this is not going to be a 20% or 40% or 50% correction. It's going to be 80% or more. So this is not something to listen to your stockbroker and say, oh, we're just going to ride this out. And this is not the time to be invested in stocks for the long run. This is the greatest bubble we've seen in a long time, and it will end badly when it does.
An unbelievable situation down there. So you're a survivor. Keep holding on.
Well, I mean, I tell you, Chris, more than that, I had to hold my windows from blowing out. If we had not been here, our windows would have blown out in our condo, as about 60% of our building did on our side.
Yeah.
I'm talking for 12 to 15 hours, and I could not walk hardly for 5 days. My calves were so sore from that much pressure. Together. And again, the condos on both sides of it. Of the condos all around us blew out.
Harry S. Nett Jr., thanks, and hang in there.
Okay.
With stocks hitting new highs, the next sector to fly could be the precious metals. GoldSeek's top industry analyst just uncovered another solid gold opportunity, Silvercorp Metals. Silvercorp's key property is located in China, the largest gold producer in the world. Silvercorp's net income is soaring, up 589%. Production eclipsed guidance by 27.5%. Totaling 6.5 million ounces. mining operations are literally printing silver at only $3.82 per ounce. AISC net byproducts credits for the fiscal year 2017. Sales increased 51% year over year, and cash flow from operations more than doubled to $80 million. Silver Corp continues to set the industry standard with reduced costs, equity appreciation, a solid dividend, and improved free cash flow. Silver Corp is uniquely positioned to capitalize on rising silver, lead, and zinc prices. To learn more about the exceptional opportunity in Silver Corp Inc., direct your web browser to silvercorpmetals.com, ticker symbol SVM in the U.S. and Canada. Remember to treat your portfolio with a core position in Silver Corp Metals.
Gold Seek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.